Welcome to the last day of GPN. Sorry for that. As you can see, I'm not totally awake already, but I guess you as well. This is Julian. He's an electrical engineer and teaches programming to kids in his free time. And sometimes he needs to process lots and lots of data. Some would call it big data. And he has some tips and tricks to do that without SQL. So, no, with SQL. Sorry, with SQL. Have a warm welcome.
Thank you very much. So my talk will be about big data and how you can process it with SQL and why SQL is a good language for that. And I will also show you like what you can use and what you should use if you want to do that on your own. What's my motivation for this talk? When I started, I only knew databases, and there's definitely more than databases. And there are like almost hundreds of different of solutions out there that you can use for processing data with SQL. And so I think it helps to have a like rough understanding what you should use because there are obvious differences. And also, I would say that big data is a rather new development. Yes, it's about 20 years old or so, but still there are like new tools appearing still. And so I think it makes sense to give an overview of what kind of tools are out there and what you should use. And also, it's a rather abstract topic. So it's very hard to get a grasp and to understand a lot of things. So hopefully this talk will help you to understand it better. A few questions maybe to you, like who has ever used a relational database? Like, okay, that's quite a lot. And who knows SQL well? A few less, but still. Cool. So what will the talk be about? So in the first part, the first three points will be about the basics. So what is SQL, what is a relational database, and why do we even care about big data? And in the second part of the talk, I will talk about the two main approaches, how we can approach big data. Then I will show you a rough classification and also some systems that you can use. And then we will focus on batch processing, and I can tell you what helped me. Okay. So SQL is a language that was developed like 50 years ago, and you have to imagine that computers back then looked very different. So they were a lot slower, and they had less memory. So it's quite amazing that a language that old is still used and heavily used, and even new systems are being developed for making use of this language. And it is specifically for databases. That means you can only use it on databases or on data. And it is not Turing complete by itself. So you can only do table transformations. You take a table in or multiple tables in, and you get a table out. And so I think SQL has to solve a like reoccurring or a constant problem so that you can apply it to, because otherwise there would have been a new language that replaces that need. But it seems that SQL is such a good fit for this kind of problems that people are still using it. And what I also want to mention is that computers are good at checking equalities. So you can compare different like huge numbers easily. And you can compare long strings or short strings easily. But what you cannot do with computers easily is to make similarities. For example, words similar to airplane. That's very hard for a computer because a computer needs to like try all the possibilities that would be there according to a function. And so SQL is the same. So it's very easy to write joins based on equalities, but it's very hard to write joins based on similarities. So keep that in mind. So let's go about what are the parts of the language for SQL. So the first thing when you think about databases is you first need to create a schema. So the data definition language is about doing that. So you can create tables, you can create databases, you can alter them, and you can drop them. The data control language is for granting access and revoking this access. So you can grant that a user is able to insert into a table, or you can grant that a user is able to query from a table, stuff like that. The data manipulation language is when you want to insert something or want to update some a row. So when you actually want to insert into the database, then you use an insert statement, which is part of the data manipulation language. And finally, the data query language is the part that we care about the most today, because in big data analysis, you only or mostly write queries that are querying things from the database or are transforming things. So data transformation, data querying, all of that part is the data query language. So let's focus on the data query language. What kind of operators are there? And on the right, you can see a SQL statement. And the first part of the SQL statement actually is able to select columns or rename columns. And in this case, we are selecting timestamp and power. The from statement allows you to choose a table from which you are like getting the data. Then you can have optional join statements to remap values or enhance your data. And the where query then allows you to filter out some rows that you might want to skip. For example, in this case, we are looking only into the future, so not even today, and we are filtering out all the timestamps that occurred in the past. And the group by statement is for aggregating and uniquing rows. And finally, the sort data or order by in SQL is for ordering your final table that you're outputting. And those few operators allow you to take a table or multiple tables and transform it into another table. And this is all you can do with SQL. There's nothing more about it. And the cool thing is, if you stack that, like if you have multiple input tables and output table, and you build up like small pipeline of it, you can do basically all the arbitrary data transformations. Okay, so what is a relational database actually? I've here a small schematic of how this could look like. And in this case, usually a database is something where you want to store data into and then get it out with queries again. And so you usually talk to this database via a client-server model. So you have some workers which are taking your queries and then processing them. For example, you could ask the worker to store a specific amount of data. Then the worker usually like stores this in files, or you can ask the worker to query data from a already existing table. Then the worker would go to the file, load it into RAM, maybe do some transformations, and then send the data to you. So a database in general is to store data safely on disk. What I mean by that is that you can make sure that the data is not corrupted or something, but it's really like as you want it to be stored. And you should also be able to make easy modifications of data. For example, if you have a huge file, it's very hard to insert in middle, because then you have to shift everything else like further away. But with a database, it's super easy to just insert a row or to also query a row. That's also the third feature. You should be able to query something. A relational database is a database where you can actually store relations. What I mean by that is that you can have different tables and there's information that needs to be connected. And the relational database offers some ways to do that quickly so that you can insert quickly and you can query the data also quickly. And examples for relational databases would be PostgreSQL, SQLite, or MariaDB. And of course, a few more. Let's also explain what a NoSQL database is, or non-relational database. This is a database where you don't have a schema. So you don't have like real defined what kind of columns exist and what kind of data types they have. And it does not store relations. So you mostly can use this to store like documents or like logs or some unstructured data. And examples for that would be MongoDB and Cassandra. It also has a use case because sometimes you just want to like write log files to a database and don't care about it too much, except when an incident happens, then you want to look at the data. So that's why NoSQL databases also have their use cases. But I think if you want to connect data, then use a relational database. So what are relational databases optimized for? They're optimized for well-structured data. That's important. So you should have like columns, and you should have like clear structure, like defined types. And they're optimized for fast updates. That means that you can insert into the database very quickly, and you have also the feature of transactions, which allows you to store into two different tables at the same time. And either your database shuts down before because of maybe an error and nothing is stored when you let it come back up, or the transaction is able to proceed and you have the stored data there. So it's atomic in that sense. And that's very cool. And regarding queries, it's optimized for small queries. That means that, for example, you might want to find an individual user in the table, or you want to query like all the different users, but you then want to paginate over the things so that you only see like small outputs. But what you rarely would do is like fetch all the users, because this is a query that takes quite a long time and then you need to copy over a lot of data. So this is very contrary to what big data is about, because in big data, we actually want to connect everything with everything and we then want to get all the results. And as you can see, relational databases might not be the best thing for doing that. So let's talk about scaling. So you might think, yeah, my database is too small, but maybe if I have just a bigger database, then this could work. So horizontal scaling is you take a bunch of computers and put them into a cluster, and then they function as one system. That's cool because you can basically put arbitrary numbers of computers into this cluster, and everything should get faster. But not all problems are in a way that you can make them actually faster on more computers. And especially if you think about writing to a database, it's very hard to scale it, because you can distribute tables across many computers, and each table is then just like a bunch of rows stored on a specific computer. But if you want to maintain consistency across all of those, then they need to communicate again, then all the nodes, and that's an issue for scaling. Reads, on the other hand, are much easier, because reads you can scale easily. You just have one system that takes all the writes, and then it distributes the written things to all the other databases, and then you can query from all of them. That's rather easy to do. You can do this, for example, with change data capture. So this is a system that is used by the database to store all the transactions that come in a straightforward manner. And it was actually developed for the consistency part, so that you can store everything that comes in, and when a database shuts down at a point, you can still like replay this transaction log, and then you get all the transactions applied. But you can also use it to send it to other systems, so they can apply your transactions. Okay, so what's the next part? The next part is why big data analysis. And for that, imagine you have a switch and you have some computers connected to it, and maybe also some other switches connected, and it's like a whole like network. And then you think, hey, I want to have a cool dashboard where I can like visualize things. So what we could do is we could have a look at the database schema for that. And the first table could be like a switch table, where you store, okay, I have an ID for the switch, I have a name and a position. For example, here you could say, okay, this is the switch, and I call the switch 1, and it's stored in, I don't know, the whole 1. And then you can have ports, these are these things, and each port has an ID, a unique ID, and it has a switch ID, so it's connected to the switch. That's what I mean by relations. And it has a port number. So for example, in this case, here we have port 1. Port 1 is connected to switch 1. And then we have port 2. It's also connected to switch 1 and so on, right? You hopefully understand how this goes. And what we then can do is we can connect switches with cables. And here we call it the link table. The link table has also an ID, a unique identifier. And it has two other columns, which are the IDs of the ports that we connect. And then our third table could be our packet table. Our packet table is quite large because it would store all the packets that have ever been sent over the network. So it has a packet ID. It has a port ID, so from which port this data was sent. It has a timestamp, so when it was sent. And it has a length attribute. So we don't store exactly the whole packet, but we just store the length of the packet. And if we do all of that, and if we have that specific database schema, then we can ask some questions. For example, we can ask, is the graph free of loops? So did nobody connect two different ports on the same switch, maybe? That's rather easy to do, because what you can do is you can go back to your table schema, you can have a look at port up and port down, join all the ports together, and then join the switch to that thing, And if you then have with port up and port down two similar switch IDs, you know somebody made a loop on the same switch. For the general case of finding loops, it's a bit harder, but still possible. You can also like calculate how many bytes have been sent over each link. That's rather easy to do. You just take your packet table, then you group by the port ID, and then you sum together all of the length, and then you know how many bytes have been sent ever over this network on a specific port. And you can even get the packet peak rate for each link. Okay, that's a bit more complex, because what you need to do now is you need to group by the port ID and the timestamp. And the timestamp you need to transform into seconds. So whenever this, so for example, if this runs for 1 year, there will be a lot of different seconds. And there will be, might be, it could be like thousands of different ports. So then you have like almost, I don't know, millions or trillions of different different values. It's like a matrix, right? Because you have two group by values. And for each of the dots in the matrix, you would sum up the lengths. So did there ever, was there ever a packet sent? And how big was the packet? And then you could compute like what's the packet peak rate. So in a second step, you would then look at the maximum in this matrix for a specific port ID. And as you can see, if you have a case like that, already rather simple. You just have a timestamp and you have a port. You can like blow up the whole problem into like millions of different things. And so with simple queries, you can still have the issue that you need to process a lot of data. Okay, so what are the approaches to approach this problem? There are mainly two approaches. One is event processing and the other one is batch processing. Let's first look on event processing. And let's first understand what is actually an event. So events can be like individual updates on a database. For example, you could use the CDC stream, the change data capture stream, and define one event as being an update to the database, for example, a row insert. Or to make another example, you can have a measurement value, like in an IoT example, where you measure the room temperature, and the sensor sends like periodic intervals of, hey, I have 25 degrees, hey, I have 27 degrees, hey, I have 26 degrees, stuff like that. And you can store all of that in an event database. So what you do is you take one event when it comes in, okay, this was just at this moment, then I store them into my database, and when a new event comes in, I append it at the end. And also system alerts could be things like that. For example, a fire alarm goes off, that's more like a real event, and then you can also store this into the database. An event stream is then the whole collection of all the past events. And it's called stream because if a new event comes in, it just gets appended at the end. And why I wrote Kafka there is explained on the next slide, because Kafka is basically the most common event database that exists. And it's just there for storing event streams. And it's also a protocol, so there are other solutions that you can use for that. And let's also quickly go into the terminology. So a topic is basically like a table. It's the name of the stream. Then you have the timestamp, so when did the event occur, and you have a key, which is the primary key of the stream. However, there can be multiple values with the same key there because there are different timestamps. So one thing gets overwritten by the newest event with the same key. And now we can think of how we can do processing with that. So we can have different streams, and then we want to connect them. So the approach there is to take all the input sources and transform it into streams. So if it's a table, just make it individual updates like insert, 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 and you have a stream. And then you can try to make joins with that. How do you do that? You actually creating state tables. Those are those things with the S here. So those are storing the most current value up to this point. And then you are comparing, like, what is the next insert here or here? Like, when the new timestamp comes in, then you are updating the state table, you're doing the join, and then you're emitting new events, because a join can now have multiple effects. Either, for example, for an inner join, there could be no event. So the thing was just not, it's just not there, present in the other table, so it could just be dropped. Or there is a row, or there are multiple rows. So it can even happen that one event in the input stream can send out multiple events in the output stream. And yeah, that's basically how you do the processing. It's rather complicated, I would say, but it's possible to do that. If we look at like what are the resources that you need in order to run this, it gets a bit complex because you first need to store all of the event streams. And secondly, you need to keep those state tables in memory. Why is that? Because we want to do processing fast. And in order to do that, when a new event comes in, we want to quickly update the state table, join the two things together, and then emit again another output operation. And that is very costly because you have to think that if you have a large network or a large graph of all those event streams joined together, you have a lot of state tables. As you can see here in the simple example, you already have 3 state tables. And so a lot of things have to reside in memory, and that's the biggest drawback of this approach. However, if we think about what are the cool parts is you can basically update a dashboard in real time because it's like suited for low latency applications. But if you want to do that, make sure to only use simple transformations. So maybe do simple aggregates or summings or stuff like that, then it's perfect. But if you are having a big pipeline and stuff like that, the state stores like grow very quickly, and therefore it's rather, not well suited. You need a lot of money to do that, and this is basically the biggest drawback of this approach. The other totally different approach is batch processing. Okay, how does this work? First of all, you take all your data, for example, from a database, and you make an export. You export it into a CSV file or something like that. We will later go into the details what other file formats exist. And then you have like a bunch of CSV files. And then you do the following. You take the CSV file, load it into memory, do the transformation, like for example a join, and then you get another output CSV file. It's like table, table, together, another table. And then you do that like consecutively. Then you take the new thing here that we just computed, and you use the other CSV file and compute the next stage. Rather simple at this point. If we look at how much resources you need, the biggest table that you have will define how much memory you need, because you need to load the whole table into memory, do the transformation, and then you can continue with the next ones. So the biggest one defines how much memory you need. The other ones are rather easy, and because you are doing that over time, you don't need the whole thing in memory. So that's good. So this is well suited for a complex SQL graph. So if you have like a huge pipeline of things that you need to join together, that's perfect. So you can have like many stages of dependent queries. And it's also great if you have ad hoc queries. So if you're thinking, I want to write a new query and it should be that, and you want to run it, it's also fast because all you need to do is load the respective tables into memory, join them. And that way it almost works like a database, just with the exception that you can do this on basically arbitrarily large queries. But you should be aware that doing like loading things quickly into memory also means like good interconnects of compute nodes and storage nodes, and you should also have a fast storage, preferably SSDs, because what you want to do here is like quick loading, quick storing. The drawbacks is if you have a change in like one of those files here, like a small change, one row changed, what do you need to do? You actually need to run the whole thing again because this file changed, so you need to load those two to memory and compute it again, like from scratch. Even one change can make the whole thing run again. That's a drawback, but if we don't want it, we should use batch processing, but event processing, but event processing has its own problems. So keep that in mind. And it also is not suited if you want to do that often. So if you want to like update a dashboard every minute, then you need to run the whole thing every minute. That can be costly. So better do it like every hour or every day, but then it's not up to date. Yeah, so these are the two things that we just discussed. Event processing, good for quick updates. Batch processing, good for a huge amount of data. And if you want to like know something at this point, just take the files, compute it, and you have the output. Okay, so classification systems. And basically, there are 3 main approaches to my understanding. Relational databases, or databases in general, like storing things, and accessing them quickly, or on the right-hand side, the big data approaches, event processing, and batch processing. And now we can look into like what kind of systems exist. So for example, relational databases you might already know. These are systems like PostgreSQL, which is a database that is most compliant with the SQL standard, MariaDB. I mean, they're the database because they also have other things like columnar data storages, where you can do batch processing within MariaDB, but it's basically another system. They just pull it together into one package. SQLite is, the most simplest database because it's just a file-based system, and all the database capabilities are done in the like library that you use to access it. CreamPlumDB and MonetDB are two databases that try to scale a bit better, so they have multi-node things, but it's not so easy to use them. So for example, in MonetDB, you then can split tables over multiple nodes, but again, as I said, this comes with problems. It's not so easy to do that. And the characteristics of that is that these serve the most known database use cases. And they're optimized for small updates and small queries. Keep that in mind. But they have strong consistency, which is also nice. So event processing. There we have, a full bunch of systems, but the most interesting ones I find are Apache Flink. This is like Apache has a whole ecosystem about big data, and this is one system. Materialize is also interesting. Sadly, it's under a commercial license, which only, I think, goes back to open source after 4 years or something. So you have to wait for the current release to be 4 years old until you can use it freely. But the cool thing is it has PostgreSQL syntax. So you can just take your PostgreSQL queries like as they are, put into Materialize, and it will work. And it's an event processing system, so a completely different like kind of approach. And ClickHouse is another thing that claims to be the fastest of those. And what they all are operating with is Apache Kafka. So they can all use that as a data store. And Red Panda, for example, is another data store that works just like Apache Kafka, but it's not built in Java, but in C++, I guess. So they claim to be a bit faster. What are the characteristics of event processing? Real-time applications, and you can do it down to almost like milliseconds. But if you want to do big joins, that system is not so easy to do that, and it gets expensive quickly. Batch processing. So the again, as I said, Apache has two systems here. Apache Spark is not a SQL database or a SQL system, but you can actually write Python programs that then process things with SQL. So you can write SQL into Python programs, and then it still works because Apache Spark has like a data frame thing, like you might know from Python, and there you can actually apply SQL to it. So that's why I put it here. Apache Hive is basically the system that you can like only use with SQL, and it stores its data usually on Hadoop file systems. And Presto and Trino are just computation engines, and they either work with Hadoop or S3. So now we go to the file systems. So usually people use HDFS or Hadoop file system or S3. And MinIO is another free thing because S3 is from Amazon, and MinIO is basically an open source variant that you can use. Regarding file formats, so you can use CSV, but CSV is not compressed, and not a great format for storing huge amounts of data. Parquet is, I think, the most widely used file format. So it's a columnar data storage. What I mean by that is that you don't store, as in a CSV files, all the rows, like first row 1, then row 2, and so on, but you store columns. That means you take one column, and then you store all the individual data points there. Then you take the next column and store all the individual data points. Why would you do that? Because in SQL, you often are looking in a join at specific columns, or you're selecting specific columns in a SQL statement. So that's why this is advantageous, because then you don't need to load the whole file into memory, but just the columns you don't need. And ORC is also a similar system. And characteristics of batch processing, they're good for huge amounts of data, but they have high latency and slow refresh rates. Okay, So what can you actually use? And how could a system look like for batch processing? So my recommendation so far is to use dbt. dbt is a system that we've not talked about yet. So it's a Python application that allows you to orchestrate all the SQL statements. What I mean by that is that you are like defining which query depends on which other query, and then dbt by its own finds out, okay, I first need to run this query, then I need to run this query, and finally this query. So it's very good for that, and you can build this dependency graph and can, yeah, run the queries in a specific order because the tables depend on each other. And it also has some other features. For example, what you can do is you can write tests. So you can say, I want to have a column that only has like two values. Then you can write a test in dbt, and what dbt will do is it will execute the query on the database or on the batch processing system, and will output you, I either have found zero rows, which means the test has passed, or I found one row, which violates the test. Then you can also have snapshots. Snapshots allow you to basically take a table and compare it with old versions of a table. So you can like do comparisons of the similar of the same table across time, which is pretty neat, because then you can like check what has changed. And all of that is written in Jinja, so it's just a Jinja templating engine, but a very powerful one. And this allows you also to write SQL that is like reusable. So you can write templates in SQL and then reuse it in other SQL statements. Very, very cool. And in that way, I think it provides all the features that SQL was missing, because before, if you want to like reuse logic in SQL, you need to copy it there. But here you have the first time the power to not copy, but use a templating engine. Okay, Trino. Trino is our compute module. So it's a stateless application. It just takes the commands or the SQL statements from dbt, and it just executes them. That means it fetches the data, it computes it, and stores it back into the file system. It has a rather easy configuration, and there are lots of connectors available. So you can even say, I want to connect to my PostgreSQL database, fetch data from there, process it, and store it in files. Or I want to store it back into Postgres. All of that is possible. So for a storage layer, I would recommend Apache Iceberg, because this is a system that allows you to do inserts, deletes, and updates of rows just like in a database. How does it do it? Apache Iceberg is still using files. So when you insert something, it basically creates a file and stores the content there. If you want to override something, it creates basically an override file and defines which values to override. And if you want to delete something, it creates a delete file and basically defines what needs to be deleted. And then on read, you read all of those files, put it together, and then you have your final table. And it's also able to do snapshots of tables, so that's also implemented there. And you can also access Apache Iceberg from Python. So you can even like say, okay, I want to have a Python program that goes to Apache Iceberg and performs a snapshot or whatever. MinIO is a S3 compatible storage. It's compared to Hadoop, rather easy to set up. So you can also like create tokens and so on from a web UI and or CLI. And the cool thing is you can even look at your files because they're just stored on the file system. If you put it all together, that's how it looks like. So on the left, we have dbt with the funny like table SQL graph. So that's dbt knows which SQL statements to execute in which order. You have Trino replicated so that you have like multiple instances like that are working on the data. This is connected to Apache Iceberg, which is the storage part. And then you are storing three things. First of all, the Parquet files. Second thing, the JSON files. Look, I made this by the brackets here. And then you have a metadata storage, which is actually stored on a real database. Why do we need that? Because the snapshots need to be consistent. So if you just throw files on a file system, if there are two processes that do the same thing, there will be errors. That's why you need a like real database to also make sure that those things are stored consistently. And min.io you can also replicate to actually store the files. Okay, so in summary, build your own data architecture. It's rather easy. You can choose from a lot of tools. Use SQL. It's a really great language, and it actually was made for data processing. So it's really amazing that after 5 years, this language is still in place, and it gets even extended to use JSON and so on. Choose your data architecture. What I mean by that is think about, do you actually want to have a database? Do you want to have an event processing system or a batch processing system? And then read the docs, set it up, run it, and yeah, enjoy. That would be it for my talk. Thanks for your attention, and I hope you have questions.
Thank you, Julian. Are there any questions? Please raise your hand. I'll give you the microphone. You ask the question, you give the microphone back. And please remember, questions are those things with a question mark at the end. Thank you. And if you keep your hands up, I can see where the next person is. That would be great.
Hi. Hi, thanks again for the talk. You mentioned that fuzzy search or similarity search is difficult for SQL. What would you recommend if you need to do it, though, on scale? I think you didn't mention that so far.
Yeah, great question. I think what I would do is I would store all of the things that I need to fuzzy search into a table. And then I would write a Python application that just goes over this table and tries to find the similarities. So it's a bit hard because usually then you need to rerun the Python application and so on, but that's, I think, how you would do it. Another thing is there are actually approaches where you can use like machine learning and like classification within SQL. So what you do is you take a table, you basically train a classifier on this table, then you have a model, and then you can use the model as like a SQL data type to import into another table where you can then do the inference and can actually like use it. That's also another approach, but I think it's rather limited. I see those two kind of things. So either store it into a table or use a Python program that just like stores the output of the computer thing, and then you can use it further on.
Have you looked into TimescaleDB at all, which optimizes like how Postgres stores time series data?
I think time series data is another different approach. I've not looked too much into it. I mostly worked with InfluxDB so far, which is also a time series database. But yeah, I mean, that's also another part, but I don't really, I mean, it's, I think, more on the like time series storing part, so I think it's optimized for that, but not necessarily for big data, as far as I know, but actually not sure.
I think that was the last.
Yeah, just an addition on the topic of like similarity searches. There is, I think, in Postgres also available a vector database or a vector engine, which can take your column where you have, for example, the text, convert it into vectors, and then you can do really what computers can do, find the closest vector.
Thank you, therefore.
Thank you for your talk. I wanted to ask, what do you think of the book Designing Data Intensive Applications by Martin Kleppmann?
I actually don't know it, sorry.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, then it's fine.
Not really a question.
Okay.
You know, do you have like any recommendations? What's the, how much data do you go then to the big data batch analysis, or how long do you stay with the classic SQL? So, how long do you stay in the classic database?
That's a good question. How long do you stay in your classic database? I think I would start with a classic database because it's the easiest. It's super easy to set up. But at some point, you will experience that it doesn't scale too well. So when the data amount grows, at some point, you will find out that your queries take too long, like first a couple of minutes, then a couple of hours. And I think if you are beyond, I don't know, 12 hours of query or something, you as a developer are thinking, that takes a quite long time. I know it will finish at the end, but still, I don't want to wait that long. So then I think comes the realization, I think there should be another system for that. And yeah, so I would say it's mostly developer driven. When developers don't want to wait anymore, then there should be another system. And yeah.
I think this was all. No sneaky questions anymore? Great. Then let's thank Julian once again.